The Roundtable is where the newsmakers come to talk. Weekday afternoons at 5:45 on The Rush with Ryan and Jay. In-depth radio. News Talk 1010.
Ryan and Jay here on The Rush, joined by an esteemed panel, as we are every single Tuesday afternoon. Christy Blatchford is here from the National Post. Amanda Galbraith is here. Trevor Mayo, great to have all of you.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be had.
Oh, wow. Very excited. Let's start off with the lack of Amber Alert today. We've got this new fancy system that is supposed to tell everybody when and where somebody has been abducted or, you know, missing. Missing is sort of lost in the criteria. If somebody's been taken, if a child has been taken, if there's an emergency, if there's a weather situation. However, today a six-year-old girl goes missing sometime between the hours of 1 and 5 in the morning. The cops lean on the idea that she may still be in the building that she lives in. We find out that's not true. She's found at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 14 kilometers away from where she actually lives. Here's Superintendent Mark Barkley.
We have far more questions than answers. And, of course, we want answers to make sure that we can identify where she went to, why she went there, who she may or may not have been with, and provide answers to the family and, of course, we ensure that there is nothing untoward that may have happened to the child while she was away.
Christy, listen, I'm not a massive fan. In fact, I'm not a fan of the system that takes over everybody's phones, the fact that people don't have a chance to opt out. But if we're going to have a system like this, if we've all said it's necessary, then the criteria needs to be massaged to cover off stuff like this.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure you know, to be honest. I'm sure the police, I mean, my understanding of the protocol for calling an Amber Alert is they have to believe that the child is in imminent danger and has been taken, has been abducted. I would assume, and until there are facts to the contrary, that they didn't have that kind of information in this case. And that's why they didn't call an Amber Alert. I don't think we can have it every which way. We dump on them when they call an Amber Alert, and then we dump on them when they don't. I think the protocol is the protocol. If it needs to be changed, it should be changed. But I'm not sure it should be changed. Do you have any idea? And I know you do. You must. But probably the average listening public doesn't, unless they subscribe to Toronto Police press releases. There are so many people who go missing every day, and lots of them are children. You can't have an Amber Alert system that people will still pay attention to if you use it for every single missing report.
Yeah, and you missed what I was saying before. I realized you didn't have a chance to listen in, because what I was saying,
I am still in Humboldt,
yeah.
Yes.
What I was saying is, if you've got a situation maybe with children under the age of 10 and the weather becomes a bit of a factor in condition, perhaps you put that into the criteria. I'm not faulting the cops for not doing it. I'm faulting Amanda, the criteria that needs to be changed. Because if you have a six-year-old, it's negative temperatures outside, it's the middle of the night, and there's a chance that she's wandered off somewhere in a big city like this one and is found 14 kilometers away, that might need a rewrite.
Yeah, I was watching this, it was on my TV, and it was quite odd. I remember Steph Smythe on CB24 was interviewing someone and being like, well, what, they had this level 3 search ongoing, which apparently is the highest they can have, mounted officers, they were searching ravines. And the question was, why wasn't there an Amber Alert? I was like, well, because she hasn't been abducted. Well, she's missing, and they don't think she has shoes on or a coat. So I think the bottom line is, to me, it struck me as illogical that they weren't using every resource available, or weren't allowed to use every resource available to them, I should say. Obviously, the cops can only operate within the framework that they have. And if it was my niece, who is 6, I was thinking I would have a Skyrider out there. I would be running around, and, you know, and I think, so I do think we should take a look at how this is done. And then I guess the second piece to this is, obviously, you know, what we're being, I think we should have some patience for the police, because what they're able to tell us publicly and what likely is going on behind the scenes are probably two very different things, given the fact this girl was found 14 kilometers away.
Yeah. But a 3-hour walk.
Dressed totally differently. And I can't imagine a 6-year-old walking that far. So obviously something else entirely is happening. And they were very reluctant to provide information.
Trevor, I believe in a review of policies from time to time. This one's fairly new, although the criteria has been around for a while. Maybe it's just time to have a rethink and a conversation. Amanda could be completely right. The circumstances they might know could be very different than what they're telling us.
And she was found safe and sound, which is great. And the incidents that have caused past reviews have not ended positively. I mean, if you remember who was at Stafford?
We don't know that it was positively ended, but she was found. We don't know what happened to her.
But previous incidents that actually inspired reviews and change of the policy from saying that we know confirm that they're abducted to we think or we have reason for them to be abducted was from really bad situations. So maybe we don't have to wait for a bad one to say, is there a way that we can do this better? Is there a way that we can actually use the resources? I was actually surprised today because I got a push alert from CP24 app on my phone saying, girl missing, blah, blah, blah. Here's where you are. Look out for it. And I remember being with my family at the time and being like, is there an Amber alert? Has anyone heard the alert on your phone, or has it come across the TV? Has there been the banner push on any TV stations? And then there hadn't been. And I was a little surprised by that considering, you know what I mean, we found out about the new system very, very recently.
You weren't alone on that, by the way. Our text board is full of people thinking exactly the same thing and that we're doing exactly the same thing this morning.
Yeah, it seems as if they get more attention for their lack of an Amber Alert than they did for the entire time they were promoting the fact that we were going to get it, which is very strange.
Rob Ford, the movie, kind of. It's called Run This Town. It's going to star Damian Lewis, who was in Homeland, who's in the TV show Billions and was in Band of Brothers.
Duh, so, he's perfect.
Yeah, pretty well-known actor. He's going to be fit with some sort of suit, I suppose.
One would imagine,
make him look a little bigger than he is. Here's Rob Ford's former chief of staff, Mark Toohey, talking about this movie being filmed currently in Toronto.
If it's a fictional movie where they just have a mayor that sort of acts in some way like Rob Ford did, well, I think we've already seen an attempt at a movie like that. If you're going to call the character Rob Ford, then you have a responsibility to try to make it reasonably accurate. And in order to do that, I think you probably do need to actually talk to people who are close to him.
Now, Christy, Robin Doolittle, who was the reporter who investigated and broke open the Rob Ford story, tweeted out, I'm glad they're rewriting the fact that it was a female reporter who investigated Rob Ford. Why have a woman be a lead character when a man can do it? Am I right? I think obviously being sarcastic. What do you think of the idea of this movie, though?
We'll see. I mean, it depends how well it's done. It could be a very interesting movie and a very sad one because it ended badly, as you may remember. Or sadly. I'd certainly go to see it. And Robin Doolittle is a great reporter, and her book on Rob Ford was actually a wonderful read. But she isn't the only person who worked on the story. I think Kevin Donovan was pretty, at least I think he was, pretty instrumental in writing that story too. And I don't really think we need to put our equity lens upon absolutely everything in the world. So if, you know, a male reporter is playing the reporter in the fictional movie or in the movie, which is by definition, I think, unless they do it as a documentary, is fictional, so what?
Amanda?
Yeah, I actually watched the trailer, which has anyone else seen it? It's very very. There's lots of guns. The looks like the mayoral character at one point actually has a machine gun which he's shooting off. So I actually don't think this is going to be. I didn't strike me as being reflective of what happened. It like kind of started that way and just sort of went bonkers and is a bit more of the movie that Kelsey or the show that Kelsey Grammer played about being a mayor. I forget what that was called, but anyway. So I think this is obviously a tale that's probably ripe for this kind of recreation. Sounds like they took a lot of artistic license with it. I'll be honest, I probably won't watch it, frankly, because like lots of people in the city, I saw it myself, and I'm not terribly interested in something that I think if they were thoughtful about it, I'd be more caring than what looks like a really.
If there's one man that was hankering for a Rob Ford picture film, it would be Trevor.
Are you kidding me? I cannot wait for this.
Are you serious?
I don't know. Like,
it looked bad.
Are you sure it's the right trailer? Because no, Mark referenced the one that was done that was sort of like a really fictional, over-the-top, ridiculous
that
thing
one,
about
I
drug
saw that
land
one.
And
yeah,
all
I
that
think
stuff.
That's the one.
And this
that's
one's actually being penned as an actual drama.
Oh, like a legit one? Okay.
A legitimate drama. And so I think it'll be interesting to see. I mean, obviously, there'll be creative license. It won't necessarily look the same for a lot of us that lived in the city and actually were horrified or challenged by some of the things that actually happen. I think in terms of Robin Doolittle's tweet, though, because I actually spent some time digesting that a little bit, because I think there's a big problem with Hollywood in terms of whitewashing or, removing the original race or sex from the subjects that they're actually going to portray, depending on the market. I don't think that's the case in this one. If you actually listen to Platt, who's the gentleman who is an award-winning actor who's actually playing one of the lead reporters in the case.
He was in Pitch Perfect.
Absolutely. But he's also a big Tony award-winning actor. He'll be here next year in a Mirvish play in Toronto. Like he's a pretty celebrated actor. He was specifically saying the story's different. Rob Ford is the foundation for the story, but there's a lot of other things that are happening and everything else around is a fictional news team dealing with fictional challenges about like news and millennials dealing with news in a social media age. But Rob Ford and that administration is sort of the foundation of a fictional story. And so after reading a little bit more about what this actually movie is going to look like, I was like, you know what? I'm okay with the casting and the creative sort of stuff because it's sort of going to tell a bigger story.
And the movie that you're thinking about, Amanda, is called Filth City.
Oh, that's okay. So it was not this one. All right, then I stand corrected.
Which the title, I think, probably gives us a really good idea.
It was horrible.
It was like machine guns and...
I was like, what is this? Delete.
Yeah, I feel bad for you reading that, looking at that today and thinking, oh my God, what's going on?
Let's talk a little bit about Doug Ford. He's distancing himself from former progressive conservative leadership rival Tanya Granick Allen. And Christy, I made this point earlier. There are some things that she has said on social media about... conversion therapy and what have you, that's completely just wackadoo and out of touch with 98% of the people in the world. But there are some comments, including, and this is right from the Toronto Star, on Twitter and on her blog in recent years, Granick Allen has linked Muslims to ISIS. The first letter in ISIS is Islamic. The Islamic State was probably responsible for that. The radicalized Muslims were probably responsible for that. I think that there is a sort of a pick and choose that you have to do with some of the things she has said, because some of her comments on burqas and the niqab might not be popular, but that doesn't necessarily mean that she's way out to lunch.
No, I don't think it does either. But I should preface this. I guess we should all make these kinds of pro forma statements. Now, I have not read everything that she has said on social media. I do not pretend to. So there may be something that she said beyond the stuff you've quoted with which I radically, deeply disagree. But I think generally speaking, I'm a believer in freedom of expression. I think she represents in much of what she says a genuine social conservative constituency that is legitimate. We may not agree with their ideas, but they are actual people with actual ideas and opinions to which they are entitled.
Yeah.
I don't blame Doug Ford for distancing himself somewhat. He's the leader of a party which is going to be struggling with how to reconcile social conservatives and other more progressive conservatives. So I can see that. But I mean, beyond that sort of tentative distancing you mentioned, I don't think, he should do much more.
Yeah, Amanda, some of the things, I mean, comparing the burqa to somebody in a ninja costume or a Spider-Man mask or a bank robber, that's offensive and offside. But having a staunch opinion about the burqa or the niqab itself, that isn't offside. So you got to balance those things.
For sure. And I will say, I am shocked that Doug Ford is distancing himself from social conservatives now that he's won the leadership.
That never happens.
It's almost like no leader has ever done that before when they're elected to the Ontario PCs. Shocked, I tell you. I will say, reading these comments, and again, I agree with Christy prefacing, I have not spent any time actually diving through her social media feed. It reads like somebody who is making one-off jokes or commentary or whatever, not knowing they would be in the limelight, which is what she's in now. And she was a bit of a kingmaker in this last election campaign, which means people should probably be paying attention to what she says. That being said, I think I would take a hard look at what she said throughout the campaign. And I am not a social conservative, so I don't agree with that stuff. But they are definitely part of not just the conservatives, but all parties.
Yeah, I think the Doug Ford also needs to take a little bit of ownership of this. She was repeating some of these comments when she was in a public arena. It's not just a tweet from 15 years ago. She repeated these when she was a public advocate going against Kathy Wynne, and when she was entering the leadership race. So I think he has to take a little bit of ownership. He counted on that to get the leadership. So it's a little rich for him now to say peace out and distance himself.
Trevor Mayo, Amanda Galbraith, Christy Blatchford, thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.